Hi, everyone. Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there is enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry.
You also have to know how to market yourself. If you don't know how to market yourself, I actually taught a course. There was another thing I did. I created a curriculum and a course called The Art of Self-Promotion for other visual artists. And what I found is people had asked me, how did you know how to do this? Well, I had been the marketing person and the salesperson for other artists before I went and got my degree. So I kind of came, and my ex-husband was an illustrator. So I was around graphic designers, advertising. You know, I was an AE, an account executive in a firm that would go out and develop the clientele.
Thank you so much, Donna, for being here today. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I would love for you to share what fueled your passion to start Clear English Coach.
Well, I was fortunate enough to go live in Thailand for 2 years. I had already been teaching ESL, I guess, beginning in 2005 at the University of Houston in their Language and Culture Center, which is an intensive ESL program. And I had the opportunity. I'd always wanted to live in a foreign country. And I thought, this is my chance. So I'm going to do it. So I sold everything that I had except what would fit in a 10 by 20 storage unit and left to go live in Thailand for 2 years. And so part of that experience was learning to speak Thai, because when I travel, I try to learn to some of the language. I can't say I'm fluent in any of them, but it has really made me very aware and sensitive of languages and how much you can connect with people if you at least make the attempt. Most Americans don't speak a second language or third or fourth. And so I have always found that it helps me fit in. I feel like I'm learning more about the culture. So I was in Thailand and living in Chiang Mai, and I was taking actually ESL Thai program at the YMCA, which was interesting that they had a YMCA in Thailand. Yeah. And so I was taking these classes, and I knew the sentence. I wanted to go to a market on Silver Street on Sunday. And I was asking people where the directions for Silver Street was. And they kept saying, "What? We don't understand you. What are you saying?" And I'm like, I had practiced this. I thought I knew the vocabulary. I thought I knew how to say it. And I could not say the word for silver. It sounded to my ears like nung, like NG at the beginning of a word. Yeah. But they could not correct me. They couldn't tell me what I was saying wrong or how to correct it or how to say it correctly. And so I thought, my light bulb went off. And I thought, this is what happens to my ESL students. They know their grammar, their vocabulary, their comprehension. They can write sentences, but when they speak, Americans will go, huh? We don't know what you said. And so when I came back in 2010, I was there for 2 years and traveled around Southeast Asia. And when I came back, I started focusing just on pronunciation and accent modification. And the students that the teachers would send me to do it, I was doing some tutoring at the time as part of the program. They kept sending me all of these students that were ready to graduate the program, but still couldn't give their presentations clearly. And within 2 weeks, it was amazing the dramatic difference that they were getting. And I was just focusing on helping them learn the placement of their lips and tongue for the American alphabet. And as I started doing this, that my students kept bringing their friends and more friends. So they kept saying, nobody's ever told us this before. And I thought, that's really interesting to me that this is like the basics of speaking a language. But I believe it's because we're unconscious of how we learn to speak a language. And so I've really taken it down to making it very simple, it's very elemental. It's really going back to the basics of where's your lips and tongue and how can they strengthen their muscles to say English more clearly, articulate English more clearly. And so it's been a fascinating journey from that. I have continued to study American accent training myself and then develop my own curriculum and my own exercises and YouTube videos and things like that. So I left University of Houston in 2016 and to do my full-time business of Clear English Coach.
I love it. What a journey. And it's just so interesting how it started with your own experience. Of course, you were already working in that element of enunciation and accents and everything, but really honing in on that specialty and that niche, because a lot of times, even when I speak English, sometimes I mispronounce words and I'm like, oh, like, I mean, but like you add another language to that. And why do you think it's so important, our language skills, to adapt and thrive in the business world?
Well, what I found is that for most of my clients, they're already a bit insecure about speaking a second language and functioning. And I try to reassure them that, remember, English speakers only speak, for the most part, one language. They don't really understand the amount of hours and years and practice that it takes to function in a second language. And so they've got all the technical skills. So they just become insecure about their own communication skills because people ask them to repeat themselves, or they didn't really get this. And the more I've taught my clients, I find it very fascinating that the adult students, because I work with mainly adults, have told me, why didn't someone teach us this when we were first learning English? Yeah. And so I've now started to talk to some more nonprofits that have literacy programs, you know, English as a second language programs, because I believe I can, if I can teach the teachers to be able to then reach all the students, I'll have more of an impact to change people's lives. And that's really my goal, was to help equalize the playing field, because they already had overcome so many challenges and experiences to leave their own community, their family, to start over in another country. It's not easy. And I think for the most part, Americans don't really realize the struggle that a lot of these people do just to have opportunities to use their skills and talents in the world. And we get the cream of the crop. We get the really well-educated, wonderful immigrants that come in here, or people that are working that come in here. So we need to, I guess, change our own discrimination, our own bias and prejudice about someone speaking a second language, and recognizing the intelligence that it takes to do that.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because why do you think Americans are, they think in an unconscious way sometimes, maybe they don't even realize they're doing it, but with the accent bias that you were just talking about, and really needing to increase our own compassion and understanding through the journeys that immigrants face, the challenges that they face, because they are very intelligent. It's just, they might not have the right accent or enunciation for things, even myself, but being able to speak that second language and are living in America, how do you navigate that? How do you think Americans can navigate that in a more effective way?
Well, I think people are trying. I'm a member of Texas Diversity Council, and try to do a lot with DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this idea of helping them to feel belong, like they belong. But I do think that sometimes, well, what would I say? I would say for the most part, Americans have a sense of an entitlement. And a sense that we know everything, that we do it, you know, we're the best or whatever. And we are in lots of ways, but we are really very young, a young country compared to a lot of these countries that have been around for thousands of years. The United States is relatively a teenager, maybe a teenager, preteen, maybe. I don't know. But I think part of that is our own sense of pride, and that we have a different cultural understanding of that idea of being self-supporting and or pull yourself up by the bootstraps. And we speak a lot in idioms. There's one for you, like pull yourself up by the bootstraps. So a lot of our own cultural language is not something that is taught in the English programs. And it's more our daily conversation. And we get, I think, offended if someone doesn't understand it. We expect them to understand us, not to have to explain what we said and clarify what we said. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of part, my clients are pretty much what they are more reserved about asking for clarification, because they feel like they're supposed to know it all. So I think part of that is recognizing and having some compassion for people that have, you know, maybe left their whole communities and their whole families and started over. I was surprised to find out that very few Americans actually travel out of the United States. or if you have their own passports and, you know, have, well, I think that's improved. I read something just the other day that I think it was maybe 10 years ago, maybe less 2% had their passports. And now maybe it's up to 40%. But it's surprising to me when I was at, for example, in one of these ESL programs with the teachers, I was giving a presentation and I asked them, how many of you have traveled to a foreign country or speak a second language? And out of the 12 people, only 2 people raised their hand. Now, these are English teachers that are teaching foreign students that have never experienced being in another country. So how much can we actually understand the challenges if we haven't experienced it ourselves?
Oh, yeah.
So I think part of it is just the lack of information, just it's an ignorance on our part. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is learning to be able to expand our own vision. And the first trip I ever traveled was after my divorce in 1997. Mm-hmm. And I went to Indonesia by myself for 6 weeks. And strange thing was, I had a vision that I was supposed to go to Indonesia. I had gone through a lot of therapy and working through a transition of after being married for 20 something years, having to really change some of my own belief systems about what I thought it was to be a wife and mother, what I thought it was to be single after being married from the time I was 19. And so this idea of going to a foreign country and even learning to trust that I would be okay, not, you know, I didn't have much money, but I was more for the experience than anything else. And it was that transition of being able to come back and feel so empowered that I started to recognize people would stop me and say, "You're American? We don't ever see American women traveling by themselves." Mm-hmm. We see European women, maybe Canadian women, but very few American women travel by themselves. Right. And I realized at that point too, is that most of my friends were like, "Oh, aren't you afraid? I mean, that's so scary to go and travel by yourself." And I thought, when I came back, I felt so empowered, you know, mm-hmm. that we actually, in some ways, have brainwashed our own society, our own culture, mm-hmm. in thinking that it's not safe to travel in these other countries. And I have to tell you, we have more crimes, more killings, more everything in the United States than these other countries do. And so I actually felt safer in some of these foreign countries where I didn't even speak the language than I did coming back to the United States. Mm. So it's really, I think it's a lack of experience for the most part. And I, at that time, felt like, you know, everybody that graduates from high school should do that year where they have to travel around the world or something, because we would have a much more understanding world and a more compassionate world, more peace, I think, and connection when we recognize that we're more alike than different.
Yeah. Mm, it's so true. Just traveling opens up your eyes and can remove the biases that you might have when you've never even experienced the culture. I know when I first went overseas by myself, I was visiting a friend that was studying abroad. I was about 20, 21 or so. And I went to London and then we went to Germany as well. And just being able to see how other people live, everybody lives similarly. It's just the way you go about it. But that language barrier can be really intimidating if you don't speak the language. And I grew up in South Florida where it's predominantly Spanish speaking and I don't speak Spanish, but I was very resistant to learning it. And as I've traveled more throughout my time, I realized how beautiful it is. And my husband speaks Spanish fluently. And I'm like, "Teach me. I have no idea." But I think it's part of understanding that it's being able to communicate and connect. And when we can do that, it removes the barriers where we feel insecure or people are saying, "Well, you're going by yourself. You're a woman. You shouldn't go by yourself, like to another country." But I think it could be so beautiful and being able to trust yourself and the empowerment that comes from when you do travel. And I've traveled a lot more since, but it's just been so eye-opening and getting to experience such different beautiful cultures around the world. And I'm really curious because I know you've traveled a lot of different places, but what are the other languages that you speak?
Well, the first foreign language I had was in high school and it was French. Mm-hmm. And I studied in Jonquière, Canada when I was in like a junior in high school. So I had that opportunity. And I realized even then that I could read it and I could write it, but I couldn't really understand it when I was trying to sit in, you know, in a circle of people that were having a conversation. I might be able to pick up a few words, And that's receptive language, but to be able to do expressive language where it actually comes out is like the last part of learning a language. So the second language I learned when I went to Indonesia, I learned to speak Bahasa Indonesian, and it's a very simple language, thank goodness. And because I didn't have any other English speakers, I had a little Lonely Planet or a little guidebook of, this is before apps and before iPhones. So I would index cards and I was writing notes and everything, but I learned in phrases rather than individual vocabulary words, which is kind of the tendency of our academic English courses. Right. I mean, you have to have vocabulary, but part of it is learning, you know, selamat pagi, you know, apa kabar, you know, which is good morning, how are you? And over there, everyone would speak to everyone. Like if you were walking on the street, everybody greets you. And it's like the, you know, spirit recognizes the spirit in you. And that was such a different way of being in a culture than coming back to the United States where people don't speak to each other. If they don't know, I mean, you're pretty much anonymous. They don't really speak to you. Mm-hmm. So having that experience of being in another culture, and then I traveled to Japan and I learned to speak a little. I was with a Japanese friend and her family, and I listened to Japanese for 2 weeks. And so, soshiwa dana, konnichiwa. There was a few phrases that I picked up. And then fortunately, when I was going through my divorce, actually, I was a homestay mother and I had students that were learning to speak English that lived with me. And so I had one Japanese student that lived with me for about a year, and he was so, you know, passionate about learning to speak English enough to be able to travel and to live here, because he did not like the culture in Japan. And it was interesting because I got a chance to have the world visit me before I stole. Yeah. And this is when I was doing my art business. So I was an exhibiting artist before I was ever, you know, this English speaker or English teacher. But I've always supplemented my art with teaching in the academic program. So from like 1989, I started teaching in the academic programs. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long journey. And when I have to, at a moment, I've just got to say, I'm really inspired by the young people that I see, like you, that have started these businesses. I'm much older, but I've been self-employed since I was about 25.
Yeah.
So I've gone on, when I talk about serial entrepreneurs, we called it self-employed. We didn't call it an entrepreneur, but we did, it was freelance. We found jobs and we did these creative jobs, or, you know, used our talents in one way or another. So I've done a variety of them. I need to start a list of all these things that I've done, because I started to think, I was a textile conservator. I was an account executive for a graphic design firm. You know, I worked retail. I've done a lot of different projects and things. So this idea of language is a way to really make the world a smaller place and to make more connected. And that idea of expanding your brain actually works better. I mean, you have the ability to cross over and understand the cultures. So this difference between the cultural welcoming and greeting that I experienced in Indonesia, and saw that the neighbor, you know, their culture, if someone dies and they have that experience of the whole village down their stores and goes and celebrates that life journey. Mm-hmm. It's not like in America where we're just worried about the dollar, you know, making a buck. And they work on Indonesian time, which is 45 minutes early, 45 minutes late. I mean, it's a much more relaxed culture. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, it's interesting to me how we go to these places that are these exotic, relaxing places, because we want to get away from our rat race in the United States. And then soon enough, we're trying to make them change to be like us. And I talked with some of the people when I was in Indonesia, and they were saying, yeah, we were happy, you know, with our kitchens outside under the trees, you know, bathing in the river and this other things. And now the Americans come in and they want us to have concrete houses, which means we have to have air conditioning, which means we have to pay for electricity, which means we have to leave our villages and go into town to work, where they didn't have to do that before. So we come in and actually take away the things we thought were lovely, because we don't really value the differences.
Yeah.
So coming back to the United States, I tend to be attracted to more, I mean, I've gone to Italy, I've gone to some other places, but I like the more primitive, what would I say, community bound cultures. And we don't, you know, there's a lot of the treasures that they have that we don't have. So when I talk to my students or talk to my clients, you know, they have a hard time making American friends. And I will tell them, you know, it's not just you. Even Americans have trouble making American friends. Because if you're an adult and you didn't go to school there, you didn't live there. I mean, my father was in the Air Force and we moved 9 times by the time I was in high school. So I was the new kid on the block almost every other year. I had to start over making friends, start over joining things. So my way of doing that was to be, you know, to take the initiative, to step in there and to start making friends and join organizations, join groups. Well, that's not the same culture that some of these other countries have. And so they don't have those particular skills maybe of how you make friends. Like in America, it's pretty much the churches. You join a church or a synagogue. Mm-hmm. And that's not only your faith, but it's your social connections.
Right. Yeah.
So we actually are much more religious, I would say religious, the United States, than a lot of these other countries, because it's more based on that. And so that in itself has what? You're either the same or you're different, rather than the fact that we all have a faith, whatever that like, and it doesn't matter the name you call it.
Right.
So absolutely. It's just a very thing to see how our socialization and our cultural differences make a really big impact too. Feel like we belong or we fit in.
Absolutely. And it really goes back to that communication piece, because when we're able to connect people, cultures, and creating that compassion, there's more peace in the world because we can understand. I was just having a conversation with a friend the other day about this, where there's a lot going on around the world right now. But when we're able to actually just communicate, and it's actually listening and hearing what the person's saying, not just like listening to respond, but really listening to what they're saying. And I love that you were talking about the different places you visited and how it's just being able to adapt to their culture and their language and understand what they're saying, and they understand what you're saying, versus I feel like sometimes here in America, not everyone's like that. And that can get crossed in the communication, where we're not really understanding what the person is saying. But when we're able to create that communication and that channel to really understand each other, it can create more understanding and awareness. And with everything that you've been able to create for the people that you work with, your channel, everything, how have you seen communication really foster change just in the people that you work with directly?
Well, you know, I had a wonderful last client just 2 days ago. It was before Christmas, and I didn't expect it. I hadn't talked with her in a little while. It's Coralie is her name, and she's a French speaker. Mm-hmm. And she was working in a restaurant, and she found me because she said, I have to repeat stuff 2 and 3 and 4 times, and people still can't understand me. And so she was taking orders from clients, you know, customers and stuff like that. So for her, it was really her job dependent on her ability to communicate. So after she took my ABCs of an American accent course, which is a digital course that combines, it's like a comprehensive course. It goes through articulation, the American alphabet, intonation, which is the melody, the rhythm, the pace. And then I also have a section on vowels, because a lot of people still have trouble with American vowels. And I understand why. Now in that course, there's an opportunity for the students to make recordings. Assignment recordings. And then I give them on those assignments so that I'm giving them guidance about, okay, I don't hear this. I'm not, you know, this is the word I'm hearing when you're trying to say this. Your tongue needs to touch a certain place, or you need to give it, you know, intonation. You need to go up and down in pitch. So I'm able to give them really clear direction. She was an excellent student. She finished course in like 3 months. I mean, she was committed and she got on it every day. And she was so excited. So this text said, you know, Miss Donna, I am so happy and I wish you just the best of the year. Your amazing ABCs course has just changed my life and stuff. So now she doesn't have to, she says it one time and they can understand her. To me, that's like life changing. I'm trying to give people skills, life skills that they will take with them for the rest of their life. It's not like an academic course. I tell people, how many courses in college did you take that you don't use any of that information anymore? Right. And then what courses did you take that you can still use, that you see you can still gain and and apply in your life to make your life better.
Mm-hmm.
Because communication's essential. It's essential. The other one I can think of that's kind of another star student was my student Bhuma, who is from Mumbai, India. And she still lived in Mumbai. She didn't even live in an English-speaking country, but she wants to get a job and work in New York City. And I'm like thrilled with her. So I hate that, you know, so she's a Hindu speaker. She, what she speaks and maybe Telugu, I can't remember what other language that she speaks, but anyway, I could understand maybe 30% of what she said, which is not a high percentage, but she was committed and she actually signed up for a year program in that program. And we had live coaching throughout that year. So within about 6 months, she was already up to about 60%. Within 9 months, she was up to 90% and she was winning Toastmasters awards.
Oh, wow.
Most improved. So for her, it was like, she said, I'm going to these networking groups and I'm in Toastmasters and I prepare all this presentation and this speech and nobody can understand anything I say. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, she said, you know, now I can actually, people will listen to me and understand what I'm saying. And she's passionate about saving our earth. So she's very eco-conscious and she's a project manager and a specialist in, I don't know if it's biochemistry or something, but you know, she's really very passionate about saving our earth.
Yeah.
So the fact of seeing that steep learning curve was for me just, I'm in awe because I mean, I may have created the curriculum and the videos, but they have to do the work. I tell them it's like going to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, you can sign up for a membership, but if you don't go work out, it's not going to do you any good. And so part of this is that I'm glad to know that my course and that I share with them and feedback I give them gives them the guidance and that all of them have said, nobody's ever taught us this before.
Well,
so to me, that's one of the passion. That's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about it is because why aren't we teaching this?
Yeah. And I'm grateful you have created this to help so many people all over the world, not just here in America, but just so many different places. Your two star students as well, just explaining their journeys and being able to really embody that. And you're right, it's taking the information that you've created, but they have to apply it. They have to practice. And that's part of being able to speak is practicing that, talking to people, being able to be understood. And I think that's a huge part of entrepreneurship. But I'm just curious because I know you were talking about how you've been in so many different industries. You used to call it self-employed before it was solarpreneur or solopreneur.
It's solopreneur. Yeah. Now it's solopreneur. I mean, you know, and it's the startups. And so I have to say, I'm excited to see younger people being able to use their creative talents and be able to really make a life for themselves. I mean, one of the reasons I chose to be self-employed was because my time was my own. And as an artist, you spend an awful lot of time in a studio, but you also have to know how to market yourself. If you don't know how to market yourself, I actually taught a course. There was another thing I did. I created a curriculum and a course called The Art of Self-Promotion for other visual artists. And what I found is people had asked me, how did you know how to do this? Well, I had been the marketing person and the salesperson for other artists before I went and got my degree. So I kind of came, and my ex-husband was an illustrator. So I was around graphic designers, advertising, you know, I was an AE, an account executive in a firm, go out and develop the clientele, you know, find the clients, do the liaison between the clients and the art or the illustrator or whatever. So I had a lot of experience of, you know, writing the contracts, negotiating the fees, finding the clients. People said, how do you know how to find these clients? I'm like, well, I would look in the magazines and I'd look to see if they had illustrations in them. And I would contact that art director and contact that magazine. I would go into a lobby of a building and look at the marquee and see, oh, is there anybody of these companies that probably has a graphic design, you know, office or enough advertising to get these jobs? So I would call them up. I mean, at this time, it was before we had internet. We couldn't search them. You had to pretty much do it using a phone book.
Yeah, a little more challenging.
Well, so now with the social media, like we have the technology that we have, I mean, my gosh, like one of the first things I learned to do when I came back from living in, let's see, when was that? One of my trips, it wasn't, I had MailChimp even before I don't even know how old MailChimp is. But when I heard that, well, when we had computers, right? I was around when computers were brand new and we had to learn how to use a computer. So the learning curve I found for my age, and I was just trying to figure out when I had started this business. Yes. I was 68 when I started this business. No, can't be 50, 68. No, 60. Wait a minute. Let me look. Because I was looking at the fact that I've started several businesses. Mm-hmm. 71 minus. I was 58 years old when I started this business. And so, and I'm passionate about it. And what I like is that when we do something we love, then it doesn't feel like work. It's work, but we'll work many more hours when it's something we really love than we will for the guy that we're working 9 to 5. And I think that's what really has shifted me all along to stay self-employed, is that my time was my own. And I will work really hard for myself. I have to say, being an artist, it's not a high income level. So you learn to keep your overhead low. You learn to pretty much be resourceful and use your creativity to make things work. So the things like tools that I use now are like the MailChimp, because your newsletter, your email addresses that you collect are the only thing that are yours. These platforms, we don't own. We don't own that audience. We don't have control over that audience. And so any of my artists, I kept saying, if you don't have a gallery book that you're asking people to get their name and address and put in your book, then you are losing opportunities to build relationships with people that may end up being clients. You don't know. It's not about hard sell. It's about being able, if they like you and you like them, chances are there may be some business in the future. But everybody's in sales. We all have to sell ourselves. And most artists don't want, don't talk about sales. They don't teach it in the university. So because being older, and I didn't go back to school. Well, I finished my graduate degree when my oldest graduated from high school. So I went back to school to get my undergraduate and graduate degree when my youngest started kindergarten. So, I hear these young people and it's like, you go, you go strong, because it's too late. It's never too late, but you do other things to supplement your income,
right?
Like work part-time or teach part-time or something, but that just expands your ability to your knowledge base.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
So MailChimp was one of the things that, and I still have a free account. I'm still not worried about getting thousands and like 10,000. I know I listen to a lot of podcasts, listen to a lot of these people to learn about social media and how to do this.
Yeah.
But I've also decided that I'm going to let it grow organically. And I want it to grow slow, because I find that it's overwhelming if you get too much business that you can't manage. And I want to be professional. And that means I want to be able to follow through and have integrity with what I say I can do. I don't want to get so much work that, and I still need to learn to delegate. I did have a VA for a short period and that was great. And then she started teaching school. So I've got to replace her. I've got to find another person. But that's been the part that for me has been hard, is learning how to delegate and let go of the vision myself, of doing it myself. And I don't know if that's a gender thing, if it's more women have trouble with that, because I don't see men having trouble with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be curious to see those stats, but I do think a lot of people listening have that hard time when they're starting a business, when to delegate. I'm finally delegating after like 6.5 years or so of just doing everything myself. I'm like, well, I can do it. And I realize the more I delegate, the more things get done in a professional way, in the way I want them to. And a lot of times people can do it better than I can. And that's okay. Like focusing on our super strength and our superpowers that we do have. But I think it's a big part that you brought up, is a lot of entrepreneurs do struggle with that delegation, because it is hard. It's like your baby and you don't want to just give your baby away, but it's okay, I'm going to have them babysit it just for a little bit and see how they do. But then eventually after time, you can see how they navigate that based off of what you're wanting, no matter what it is. But I think that's a big part of entrepreneurship, that people have a hard time with the letting go, surrendering, whatever it may be. But I do love that you said so much there, but I love the fact that you said about Oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought. It'll come back to me. Like, it'll come back to me. There was just
good things said. I was like, what is it?
But I love that you want to grow organically, being able to stand in that integrity, focusing on the people that are meant to come to all your social media, to your channel, to your program, to be able to dissect what it is they're trying to do with speaking, being able to really stand in their power and feel understood, heard, and be able to effectively communicate, because that's a big part of the business world. We're selling ourselves on a daily basis. We may not think we're in that. I know in psychology, they did not teach us how to sell ourselves. They're like, figure out what your modality is and you'll eventually have a practice or work somewhere. But the business tools weren't there. And I love that you said MailChimp is a really great opportunity to just have your emails in one place, because you're right. Social media, there, it could go down tomorrow, but if you have that email list and you've nurtured that and really fostering those relationships, and I think that's been a common theme throughout this from your experiences of traveling, working with your students, being present with each person and being able to communicate and help them communicate more effectively so they can get their message out there. They can speak and have their voice heard and understood. And I love that's what you fully embody and encompass, because I do think that is what's changing the world to be more inclusive. And that's what this channel is even about, as well as having that inclusive community. And I've been enjoying this conversation so much. But Donna, where can people find you, find your services? We're going to link everything below, but if you let us know too.
Oh, I'd love that. Well, I have my website is Clear English Coach, C-L-E-A-R, English, E-N-G-L-I-S-H, if I can spell, Coach, C-O-A-C-H. And my name is Donna Durbin. So you can find my YouTube channel at Clear English Coach or Donna Durbin. And my email is donna@clearenglishcoach.com. So on LinkedIn, the same thing. I've tried to keep that name consistent for the most part. Again, all this thing, learning about branding, you know, learning about doing this. It's hard to do, but I do know that as an artist, I wanted people to be able to identify my name with my work. And so that is something that I've tried to stay consistent with. And, you know, a lot of times people will try to make a clever studio name or a clever this. Well, I can see you have a name of your company and then you're not the sole proprietor of it. What's the difference if you're going to sell it? Clear English Coach is something that if I decide to sell it, I could. It's got that identity as well as my name, but it's not just under my name. So yes, please check out my YouTube video. I've got a 15-minute mouth and tongue exercises, which is the most watched video of my channel, which I guess I must have put it on about 5 years ago. And I did not realize how rare it was to have, I have what, 5,700 viewers, I think, or it's over 5,000. I didn't realize how rare that was until I heard us in a networking group talk about what, less than 2%, I think, have. So I'm like, whoa, that's really, I'm impressed with myself.
Yes, as you should. That's an amazing accomplishment, but you're helping so many people.
But I was doing the videos because I realized my clients weren't practicing. And so I thought if I create a video of this that they can practice with me, then I'm modeling what they need to be doing. I'm showing them. And if you'll see my, you know, I'm showing my mouth, I'm showing my tongue. It's kind of weird, but I just realized, you know, that's, we have to become comfortable with it to be able to do this. And it's not an academic part. It's a physical part. So it's using, building new muscle memory. So I find it fascinating. And I find it fascinating that most English speakers don't know how we learn to speak.
Yeah.
It's an innate language ability, but it becomes unconscious. It's a behavior.
Yeah.
It's a habit. And we have to change that. We have to really do it on a consistent basis so that it changes. But this has been delightful. I've got more and more I could say.
I know. And I love it. You're a wealth of knowledge. And I just love what you are doing to really help people. And it's something that is a particular niche that isn't spoken about enough, where people can understand how to just use these practices, just like going to what you explained earlier, going to the gym. You can have a membership, but you can't have your body change if you're not going. And it's the same concept with how we speak and really enunciating things and being able to use our voice and be able to be understood and valid what we're saying. It's very valid, but we have to be able to project our voice and be able to be understood. And that's exactly what you help people understand what to do, how to do it, and give them the actual tools in order to facilitate that. as well. But I know we could talk more and more, but thank you again, Donna, for coming on. I just so appreciate all your energy, everything you're doing to really help people feel connected. That's what I get from all of this, is you're connecting the world, no matter what the language is, but really helping them have a foundation here in America, but also so many other places around the globe as well.
We're very fortunate. And I tell them we're very fortunate that English is the global business language, because there are very few Americans that could function in another language.
That's true. Yeah. I got a lot of work to do.
Me too.
Thank you so much, Donna. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from today, and we'll see you on the next episode.